So over the last few weeks during the summer, we've been having the summer series, and we've had a lot of good men that have very articulately discussed the importance of a Christian's influence. And as you know, all good things must come to an end, so tonight you get me, and I will just unarticulately try to do this. So we've learned that influence, that we all have influence, that we can all impart it, and we do all impart it on the people we come in contact with, whether for the betterment of them and for the betterment of the individual and for the cause of Christ or not. We all have influence. Christians are the salt of the earth, they're the light of the world, and we're like leaven. And if we're not actively trying to fulfill those missions, then we're creating a significant void in the world. So to get started, I want us to consider a couple of questions. Here we go. Do you think businesses consider their influence? Absolutely they do. That's a there's a term called corporate social responsibility, and there's a whole science around it, and there's usually teams of people around it. Businesses understand that influence is critical to, it's a critical asset that must be effectively managed. People are no different, but some businesses utilize their influences to support the good of the community. Some use their influence to support the environment, but every single one of them attempts to use their influence to support their ownership or their shareholders. So as Christians, do we consider our influence? Should we consider our influence? Of course. Of course we have to. What about our influence in the community? It's probably something we don't talk about nearly as much, and it's something that is important. And it's something I think, being an engineer, I like to ask questions, but I think we need it just in do we consider our influence in the community? It really begs some questions. One of the questions is, what is my community? Right? We've got to define what our community is. And so if I think from the Bible, somebody asked a question very similar to this about 2,000 years ago. Remember what that question was? Who's my neighbor? That's right. It's in Luke. So how do you answer the question? Who is my neighbor? What is my community? Is it fair? Hey, I found the black screen button. That was the problem. Put that down now. So, you know, I was looking through the pages of the book, in the front pages of the book that Wendell Winkler wrote that we're referencing. And did anybody happen to notice the copyright date? I know it's not a widely distributed book within the group right now, but it was copyrighted in 1971. So then I kind of think, all right, was what the community he's talking about then, is that the same thing that we're dealing with now? And when he's talking about how do we influence our community, do those things back then apply to the things now? So with the non-magic of mapping software, I put together a couple of maps to help us try to consider what is our community. So another question is, do, as Christians who gather together to worship in this place, 305 Rusk, Roanoke, Texas, how big of a circle around this building should we draw and call that our community? Is that the right question to ask? Does our community follow designations on a map? Does it follow street signs? Does it follow county lines? Does it follow city lines? How do we figure this out? So when I was thinking about this lesson, I remember Jay made a heat map. I don't know if you know what a heat map is, but that's a heat map. A heat map is a map that shows distribution of points. So in a geographic heat map, which is what you see above, that shows where the members of this congregation physically live. So on a scale of green being a few to red being a lot, that's how our members are currently distributed through the community. So for discussion today, and the way that this heat map was written, I would almost think about considering our influence as a heat map, because it really shouldn't just be where we worship, right? Our community is also where we live. Yes? No? Maybe? Seem logical to me, but is that really the right way to define a community, is where we live? Because most of us have a sphere of influence outside of our homes as well, right? What about those of us who have jobs, go to school? Isn't really our community almost the people that we come in contact with? So it's actually very hard to pull contact lists out of Facebook and LinkedIn and actually get addresses. So that didn't work for me. But I did find an old contact list that I had, and so I created it and dropped it into a map. So this was an old list I had from an old company, and about a quarter of them actually mapped. Turns out I didn't enter most of my contacts correctly. But so remember, these are actually people that I've shaken their hand, taken a card, probably given them a card, and had some kind of a face-to-face interaction with. So you can see there's a little bit of density in the U.S., and then we've got some stuff in Europe and over in the East. So I turned that into a heat map. And so if you want to consider, does that change our perspective of what our community is? Black button. I'll get it. All right. Does that change our perspective of what our community is, based on the people we come in contact with? But could there be any other types of methodology we should really put into deciding what our community is and who we have contact with? Seems like there's other ways that we communicate. I don't know if you can think of any, but there's a few different types of ways that we communicate now that we didn't do in 1971. So coming back to the question, what is my community? Sorry, I kind of took you down a little rabbit hole there, but does that change our perspective? You know, the world we live in today is the most connected world that's ever been. And in my mind, that the ability to influence people has never been so great, but it's also never been so scary, and how we can affect people that we don't even really know, and how people look at us and make judgments based on 140 characters sometimes. So do we have examples of the Christian influence of in the Bible, or do we have examples of Christian influence? So if we were going to go somewhere, I would say a good example is in the Bible, right? Where would we go to see how Christians influence their community in the Bible? Acts. I like it. So if you want to open your Bible to Acts, this is as much of a Bible on the screen as you're going to get. You got to use your own paper or electric one. Oh, wait a minute. Really, beginning in Acts chapter 2 is a great point, a great place to where we can really see how Christians acted in a community, how they were received in a community, and really the type of results that they affected a community with. So look in Acts chapter 2, verse 47. The church in Jerusalem had favor with all people. Do we have favor with all people? What was the results that the church had? Acts 2:41, Acts 4:4, Acts 5:14, and Acts 6:7. They had extremely rapid growth. What were some of the actions that the Christians present there at the church in the first century? What were they doing? How were they having these significant growths in the congregations? Or in the congregation. Look at just Acts 2:42, and we'll just kind of start skipping through here a bit. So 2:42, they were steadfast and worshipful. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and in breaking of bread and in prayers. Acts 2:44-45, they were united. Acts 4:32-37, they were benevolent. They were unselfish. Acts 2:46 again. So we're going to bounce back and forth between two and a bunch of places. Or if you're just taking notes, we'll hit this pretty quick. But 246 and 541, Christians were happy. Acts 5:42 and chapter 8, verse 4, they were zealous. We can see as well in 2:42, they were prayerful. And in Acts 4:32 and 34, they loved their brethren. 2:37, 38, and 41, the Christians that we read about in Acts, the first century Christians, were truly converted. I don't think we could say they were Sunday Christians. So, lest we think the first century was all rainbows and unicorns, what was the environment for Christians in the first century? They were persecuted. What happened just before the development of the church in Acts 2? Jesus was crucified, right? So they were under extreme persecution, especially as you get later into the period with of people like Saul. So when we think about our influence and how we're acting in a community, let's consider that we all have problems, but the examples we have in the Bible also have significant problems. So let's talk about some of the different modern-day opportunities for influence in the community with regard to our local congregation. Does anybody throw some opportunities out there? How can we affect the community as a congregation, a group? What about VBS? What about gospel meetings? Men's breakfast, we announced that. That's coming up Saturday. We're going to influence, at least for a little bit, whoever's at Whataburger. I mean, I would kind of wonder why a bunch of guys just showed up and then disappeared. Ladies' classes. There was ladies' class this week. I hope you went. I heard it was good. What about devotionals? What about potlucks? That's right. Community events. That's right. We'll talk about a little bit of that here in a second. What about building a new building? You think that influences a community? I can show you on this picture a couple of people that get influenced from 7 a.m. to midnight almost every day of the week. You know, and there's a whole bunch of people back here on the back that are going to be really happy when we're done. So if you want to, you know, you want to talk about influence, the next door neighbors are feeling our pressure. Just to give you a little story, with the new building, the light brown there is our future concrete pad. So very soon we're going to be pouring concrete, and we're going to have to start about midnight and pour and then shape it for almost 24 hours. So we talked to the city about that, and as you might imagine, the city's not going to be really happy about having to do that in a residential area. So Joey came up with the idea of, what if we went and talked to all the neighbors and offered them a night in the hotel so we don't disturb them? So Cletus has been going around and knocking on doors. What kind of an impression do you think they have of the church now because of that? Because of course Cletus isn't introduces himself, says he's with the church and what's going on and what we're trying to do to help them. So that's just a small little situation, but in those people's minds, that may be the only impression they get of us, except for looking at the brick building in a few years. Do you guys remember Welcome Wagon? Not everybody was here with Welcome Wagon. As a congregation, we had a goal to reach out to every new member of the community on a monthly basis. So if anyone participated in Welcome Wagon, this is what 4 months of door knocking look like, and we did this for a while, a couple years. So that's an example of an opportunity where you can have influence as a corporation, or not a corporation, but as a company. Still got me in mind. But what about What else? What else can we do? Community events, we already talked about a little bit. What about on the individual Christian level? What about sports? What about community meetings, area events, community organizations? Can you participate in these type of events and as a Christian and act like a Christian? Sure. And if you can, and if you do participate in them, you must act like a Christian, right? Just as one of the things I participate in is we've got, the city here has got some really good examples, some really good opportunities to work with and to serve the first responders, both the police and the fire departments. And as you're involved in those groups, not only do you get to service them, they also want to know, what you're all about and why you're there. And so it's provided some really good opportunities to get up in front of groups and saying, here's who I am, here's why I'm here. And, by the way, we're building a church building across the street. And so it opens up a lot of doors. And so that's another sphere that you can touch. But then by being involved in different types of community organizations, you also are now involved in outside of those in organizations as well. So it allows for great opportunities for volunteer type work. What about in the situation of illness? What about death in the congregation or in the community? If not in those situations, that to me is one of the perfect examples of where the compassion and care and sympathy of Christians should be felt by members of the congregation and then by their extended families, and certainly in situations outside of the congregation. What about disasters and tragedies? In the last couple of years, there's been examples of everything from house fires to hurricanes to tornadoes to explosions that people in this congregation have given their time and their money and their things to support families. Some of those were members of the church that were supported, some were not. But I can tell you the people who received that help, they had a certain impression, and they were certainly influenced by those people and by the church. So, how much good can a community of Christians do? How much good can a congregation of Christians do in a community? It should be unrivaled, right? So, let's be honest. In the world we live in today, if you profess to be religious, you're going to get put under a microscope. Society and the world is looking at religious people and just looking to catch us in hypocrisy. And unfortunately, it's not an abnormal thing for them to find people, religious people, in hypocrisy. The Christian must live his religion or her religion. Ultimately, you got to practice what you preach, right? And that's in this building, that's at home, that's on the internet. See, there's a fourth monkey up there that has recently been added. Hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil, and post no evil now. That's something we didn't have to worry about a few years ago. But aside from the characteristics that we just looked at in Acts, I want to kind of start to close this up with some of the additional points that Mr. Winkler brings up with regard to practical application. One of the ones I thought was kind of cute was, he says, don't be guilty of spreading hoof and mouth disease. If you never heard of that, that's where you hear something and you hoof it over to your neighbor and then you spread some news. So, gossip, 1 Timothy 5:13. We need to, as Christians, we need to maintain domestic tranquility, whether that's with our spouses, our kids, just generally the people we come in contact with, contain and control our temper. Ephesians 6:4, James 1:19, and 1 Timothy 2:2. We mentioned it before, but again, be friendly. A Christian, if nothing else, should be friendly. Proverbs 18:24. And, it's often been said, even from the pulpit here, that people really don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that should be something that Christians are known for in the community, is caring. Practice second-mile Christianity, Matthew 5:38. Turn the other cheek. Go the extra mile when somebody asks something of you. Don't repay evil with evil, repay evil with good. We've got to watch our speech, Titus 2:8. We've got to watch our dress, 1 Timothy 2:9-10, because others certainly will. You know, something that Heather and I know quite a few of the congregation like to go to every year is polishing the pulpits in Sevierville, and it's a week-long lectureship, I guess is what you might call it. It's about 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. of nonstop preaching, teaching, lectures, singing. One of the things that I hear mentioned every year by men young and old is that they enjoy so much that they can come in the summertime to a massive situation with 4,000 other people there and not worry about having to avert their eyes because the women there dress modestly, the girls there dress modestly. And I mean, from my perspective, it's very refreshing as well. You know, speaking of influence, when 4,000 Christians descend on a fairly small community, they notice it, right? So we eat out way too much when we're there, and all the time the waitresses are saying, "Oh, are you guys here for that church convention thing?" Yeah. "Oh, we love this part every year. We love, you know, this is our favorite part of the year when you guys come into town." This year I'm going to ask the first responders, but I'm pretty sure they probably enjoy it too, except for their tickets that they get to write go way down, because people actually drive courteously through there at that point in time. Let me just kind of close with one quick note. It doesn't take an influx of 4,000 Christians to influence a community. It just takes one. Just takes one good Christian to influence a community. And so how fortunate are we that we have, I don't know, maybe 100 here tonight? Think about what we should be doing with the community, individually and as a group. Just to kind of take it back to the name of the book, remember, the Christian and his influence in the community. We're all individuals, even though we can influence as a group. But make sure as individuals that we're actually doing that for the good of Christ. Done. 20? Can I go longer? That's all I got. We're dismissed early.